Hi, this is Dean Butler. You're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson, thanking you for listening to this special encore presentation of TV Confidential. We'll be back with a brand new edition of the program next week. We will welcome back Jerry Jewell of The Facts of Life and Deadwood, plus our friend Jim Rosen will join us as we pay tribute to James Darren. In the meantime, we will open up this hour by welcoming back our friend Mark Shaw. Mark Shaw, investigative reporter, former criminal defense attorney, and legal analyst for CNN, ESPN, and USA Today. Mark Shaw, also the author of 25 books, more than 25 books, including The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, The Life and Career of Dorothy Kilgallen, the Pulitzer Prize-nominated newspaper columnist and panelist on What's My Line, whose mysterious death in November 1965 remains unsolved to this day. Mark's latest book, Collateral Damage, not only reveals more than 50 similarities between the lives and deaths of Dorothy Kilgallen and another female icon of the early 1960s film legend Marilyn Monroe, but makes the argument that the connections between Dorothy Kilgallen, Marilyn Monroe, and John Kennedy, and specifically the ambitions of Kennedy patriarch Joseph Kennedy and the war against the mob that Robert Kennedy waged in the early 1960s, ultimately led to the demise of all three people. We will tell you more about Collateral Damage in just a second, but first, Mark Shaw, welcome back to our program.
Thanks so much, Ed. Appreciate it.
Collateral Damage is essentially the second sequel to The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, or perhaps more accurately, it is the third book in your Dorothy Kilgallen trilogy. In between your appearances in our program, you wrote a book called Denial of Justice, which follows up on your efforts to reopen the investigation of Dorothy Kilgallen's death. What sparked your interest in Dorothy Kilgallen originally?
Well, originally, it's amazing because I was working on something today where I don't know if you know this, but I've been honored recently by my alma mater, Purdue University. It took me 6 years to get through that. And when they called and told me they wanted to archive my body of work, I told them I thought they had the wrong person, but they're going to do that. And so I've been sending boxes of material to them all the way back to my criminal defense days and television days and then the books that I've written. And I had to go ahead and kind of give them an idea of what happened, which borders on the question you just asked. I never knew anything about Dorothy, Ed, as you may remember. I just only knew that she was the star panelist on What's My Line, the television show that was on CBS for about, I think, 15 years. 10 million people watched that show every Sunday night live from New York. And Dorothy was kind of the star panelist on that show. Remember, they guessed unusual occupations by people, the first female woman writer for the NFL, a guy who'd owned a wax museum. They had all of that, but Dorothy was the star. And so that's all I knew about her until I investigated, researched, and then wrote a book about Melvin Belli, the famous San Francisco attorney who was Jack Ruby's lawyer. And while researching that book, I was told that, wait a minute, Melvin Belli knew Dorothy Kilgallen, and I thought they were talking about What's My Line, but this guy, this doctor that I was talking to, said, no, you know nothing about her, Mark. She's an amazing woman. Sure, she was on What's My Line, but she had a syndicated newspaper column to 300 newspapers across the country. She had a radio show with her husband listened to by a million people a day. She covered the Dr. Sam Shepard case, which became the fugitive movie, the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case, and the Jack Ruby trial. Well, that perked up my ears, as I think it would with you, Ed, because you're a curious guy and always trying to figure out what's going on with things like that. So I started to investigate Dorothy's life and times, research that. And what I found out was that she really is, and nobody's ever disputed this, the most credible reporter to have ever investigated the JFK assassination. She was at the trial of Jack Ruby. She was the only reporter to have interviewed him there. A number of other things went on, and then Dorothy had basically pieced together that there was a plot to kill JFK. She wrote many columns about that are available at the DorothyKilgallenStory.org, the DorothyKilgallenStory.org. The Oswald File Must Not Close was the first one. And so she was getting as she told friends and family and all of that, at the end of 1965, she was getting close, she said, to cracking the JFK assassination apart and figure out and let people know what she felt like was the truth. It pointed towards a mafioso in New Orleans who was double-crossed by Joe Kennedy when Marcello and his gangsters helped the Kennedys win the 1960 election. They were going to lose it, and they called those guys in. They helped them win Illinois and West Virginia, and the deal was if they helped them win, which they did, they'd leave those guys alone. But Bobby Kennedy, as you kind of mentioned, went after them, and the double cross there. And I started looking at the JFK assassination through Dorothy's eyes, because how she did it was to think about, instead of why JFK was killed, why Bobby Kennedy wasn't killed instead of why JFK was, because as I was told by the Ruby prosecutor, Bill Alexander, Bobby had many more enemies, and that was true. So she was about ready to crack the case. She was writing a book for Random House, and then unfortunately at the age of 52 on November 8, 1965, she was found in a bedroom she never slept in her townhouse, so wearing her makeup, eyelashes, and a hairpiece. It was obviously a staged death scene, but when they got there, they saw an empty bottle of Secanol, the sleeping pills, and right away, presto, decided that she was another celebrity who'd overdosed, and that was the verdict, and that's what was in the newspaper. And so until I started researching the case to show that she didn't overdose on drugs, she was actually poisoned with 3 barbiturates, not one, based on the autopsy, that Dorothy Kilgallen was indeed the reporter who knew too much, and had to be silenced because she was threatening to expose Marcello as well for orchestrating the assassination, and also J. Edgar Hoover for covering up. Well, it was amazing because, just like me, so many people didn't know who Dorothy was, but that book ended up being a bestseller. And then, as you said, I wrote Denial of Justice, which had the Jack Ruby trial transcripts in there. And frankly, Ed, I think you'll find it interesting. I was not going to write this new book, Collateral Damage, and I can explain to you why.
Before we do that, Mark Shaw is on the line with us. Mark has written more than 25 books, including The Reporter Who Knew Too Much and Denial of Justice, both of which are available through Post Hill Press as well as Amazon.com. Mark's latest book, Collateral Damage, The Mysterious Deaths of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen and the Ties That Bind Them to Robert Kennedy and the JFK Assassination, also available Post Hill Press, Amazon.com, where the books are sold online. For more on Mark, MarkShawBooks.com. For more on Dorothy Kilgallen, the Dorothy Kilgallen Story.org. Okay, you teased how you did not intend to write Collateral Damage, but at some point I'm going to assume that along the line you made, you stumbled onto this, well, maybe not stumbled on is the right word, because you're a pretty deliberate guy. So, and if you read Mark's books, you'll understand why. But when did you first discover the connection between Marilyn Monroe, Kilgallen, and JFK and Bobby Kennedy, and how did you piece it all together?
Well, it's most interesting because I had written the books about Dorothy and the JFK assassination. I thought that was enough. They're true crime murder mysteries, the books about Dorothy and everything. And I'm a historian, though, and so I kept hearing from my readers around the world, just like I hope I'll hear from listeners of your program, Ed. And I get tips, people give me information, all of that kind of thing, but they kept asking the same question. Is there a connection between the life and times and death of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen? And I did not think there was. But I decided finally to look into it, and the first thing I came up with, it's over here on my wall by my writing table, is a photograph of Marilyn and Dorothy. They were at 20th Century Fox Studios in 1960, looking happy on the set of a Marilyn Monroe film. So that made me know that they knew each other, and then I kept trying to figure out in my own mind. I'd always heard that the verdict on Marilyn was that she had committed suicide, but in some ways I always wondered if that was really true or not, that, you know, it just didn't seem to me like, I didn't know a lot about her, but it just didn't seem to me like that a woman who was kind of at the top of her career would have even considered doing something like that. So the real key here, and I think this happens with any stories that you've written about or you really feel like, wait a minute, this all doesn't make sense, there was an aha moment, and it was a column that Dorothy had written called Marilyn Monroe Has Hollywood Talking Again. And it was actually on August the 1st, 1962, which is just 3 days before Marilyn died. And Marilyn wrote in part, Marilyn Monroe's health must be improving. She's been attending select Hollywood parties and has become the talk of the town again. And she's cooking in the sex appeal department, too. She's proved vastly allusive to a handsome gentleman who is a bigger name than Joe DiMaggio in his heyday. So don't write off Marilyn as finished. Now, Joe DiMaggio, your listeners may recall, the great baseball player, but that was Marilyn's second wife. They did divorce. But I was really quizzical because this did not sound to me like somebody who is in any sort of a mental state who would have committed suicide. They said that she ingested about 50 barbiturate pills between about 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock at night on the night she died. There were some questions about that that I finally found, but that just didn't sound like that type of a person. And then I found the autopsy and the certificate of death for Marilyn, and those were at the National Archives. It's amazing. I'm not the greatest researcher in the world, but these things were out there. Nobody just ever tried to look for them.
Yeah.
But at 10 o'clock in the morning after Marilyn died of supposedly committing suicide, the result of the autopsy was overdose of barbiturates. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just that many hours after she died, they changed it on the certificate of death to suicide. Well, that made me really wonder what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And then Dorothy wrote another one of her columns, Ed, and basically it talked about the questions that readers had sent in to her and questions she had herself about the suicide. Why was the light on in Marilyn's room when she died? She slept in the dark. Why was she found nude? She didn't sleep in the nude. Why wasn't there a glass found in the bedroom? How could she have ingested all these pills if, in fact, she did so without water? And so she asked all these questions, and I started then asking the same questions. So I came up with the idea that, hey, if Marilyn Monroe did not commit suicide, then what could have happened to her, and who is this handsome gentleman who is a bigger name than Joe DiMaggio in his heyday? Well, like you, Ed, I think you would have turned, as I did, to John Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was common knowledge that after Marilyn sang happy birthday to John Kennedy on his 45th birthday at Madison Square Garden, he and Marilyn had a love affair. There's a photograph that's in the book. It's the two Kennedys, Bobby and Jack, with their backs kind of the camera, and Marilyn is standing there. They both look like they amazed at how great she looks. And so I looked into John Kennedy. I thought, well, maybe he was involved in the death, but I found out that was a very short-lived love affair. Joe Kennedy told Jack, hey, you're going to run for president in 64, so get away from her. So I thought, well, who's the second most powerful man in the United States? And that was Bobby Kennedy. And that opened up the proverbial Pandora's box, because I started finding out that Marilyn, and this is not something that a lot of people knew, had a very torrid love affair, according to a CIA document that I had, with Marilyn Monroe all through the summer of 1962. That he was in Los Angeles on the day she died. I proved that through a ledger over at 20th Century Fox, where he landed on a helicopter on that day. I found a Beverly Hills Police Department's account that he stopped a car on Wilshire Boulevard, and you're familiar with that, going 75 and a 30, and the driver of the car was Peter Lawford, who was the brother-in-law of both Jack and Bobby Kennedy, and Bobby Kennedy was in the back seat. And so I was able to find out then that the week before Marilyn's death, there was an event up at Lake Tahoe. It's called the Cal Neva Club, and Peter Lawford was there, Frank Sinatra was there, there were a lot of other people there, Sam Giancana, the gangster, was there. There were accounts that Bobby Kennedy was there as well and all of that. And Marilyn got the idea that they'd ask her up there to kind of pass her around, as she told a friend, like a piece of meat. And Marilyn then made the biggest mistake of her life. Just, in fact, a similarity with Dorothy Kilgallen, because she told too many people that she was going to crack the JFK assassination. She told one hairdresser, if the wrong people knew what I know about the JFK assassination, it would cost me my life. She said she bought a gun and was afraid for her family because she was going to do a tell-all book for Random House. Well, Marilyn made the mistake of saying, okay, I've had it with you guys, you Kennedys. I'm going to the media with this. Well, she came back to Los Angeles, and I was able to prove in the collateral damage book that Peter Lawford and Bobby Kennedy came to her home on August 4th, 1962 in the afternoon and begged her not to go to the media. And why did they do that? Well, one reason would have been that she would talk about the love affairs with both Kennedys. But I found a CIA document that had actually been written about 2 days before Marilyn died. It talked about the torrid love affair with Bobby Kennedy and Marilyn, but also it mentioned that Marilyn was going to tell the media about matters of national security that John Kennedy had shared with her, having to do with his plan to have Fidel Castro assassinated. Well, you can imagine, Ed, those are not things that the Kennedys could have allowed to go ahead and be given to the media, especially the matters of national security. Both of those Kennedys' careers would probably have been ruined, for sure. About
Yeah, Kennedy. there's pillow talk and there's pillow talk, and it sounds like Kennedy made an error.
Well, I think they were trying to impress her, probably,
yeah.
You know, whatever. But she told them, no, you know, I'm going to go to the media with this. I've had it with you guys. Well, the details are all in the book, but I was able to prove that Marilyn Monroe, first of all, did not commit suicide. There's no way that she did that. But also that the biggest motive, the strongest motive for silencing Marilyn Monroe was through Bobby Kennedy and through operatives of his. And I've just gotten another new account of what happened that night. I pieced together the scenario under which they came to the home. They begged her to not go to the media. They left, and then Bobby Kennedy's operatives came into that home, and I'm not going to get into exactly how Marilyn Monroe was killed, but suffice it to say, she never ingested all those pills, so the barbiturates were ingested into her body in a different way. And, you know, what really, another similarity here, of course, was the fact there was the autopsy in Dorothy Kilgallen's death was bogus. They only found one barbiturate in her system, and I found three, which pointed to murder. In Marilyn's death, the autopsy was performed, and you'll know this name, by Dr. Thomas Noguchi, who handled the OJ and all the other, you know, Natalie Wood, all those cases. And believe it or not, this is what shocked me the most probably about my research, is that he conducted his autopsy, and he came back with the fact that she had committed suicide and all of that. And then, 2 weeks later, he actually admitted in an interview that he had made a mistake. He had forgotten to look at certain internal organs of Marilyn Monroe, including her intestines and some other things, and that he just forgot to do so. And by the time he realized that and went to try to find them, they had been destroyed. Now, this is one of the most famous women in the world, if not the most famous, and he botched the autopsy there, just as had been done in Dorothy Kilgallen's case, and also, as I think you probably know, the same thing happened in JFK's death. So all three deaths are connected, and what I came up with was this conclusion, and I want to see what you think of it. And that is, if Bobby Kennedy would have been prosecuted in 1962, for his complicity in Marilyn Monroe's death, based on all of the evidence that I have in the book here and that was available then he would have been rendered powerless. And the only reason that JFK was killed was because those gangsters needed to get Bobby Kennedy off their backs, and if they killed Bobby Kennedy, JFK would come after them with everything the government had.
Mark Shaw's on the line with us. Mark Shaw, investigative reporter, former criminal defense attorney, and former legal analyst for CNN, ESPN, and USA Today. Mark's latest book, Collateral Damage, The Mysterious Deaths of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen and the Ties That Bind Them to Robert Kennedy and the JFK Assassination, available at Amazon.com. MarkShawBooks.com, DorothyKilgallen.org, wherever books are sold online. We'll talk some more with Mark Shaw after this quick time out here on TV Confidential.
Buying or selling a home can be one of the most stressful things we'll ever do in life, but it doesn't have to be. And no one knows better than our friends at Front Porch Realty. They're a community of realtors serving the Northern Bay Area of California that cares about their clients as individuals first and foremost. Whether you're a first-time buyer or looking to lease or sell your property in the Bay Area, Front Porch Realty will help you through this important transition by providing you with the right information for your situation while lessening the pain. They also work with a network of realtors throughout California who provide the same high caliber of customer service. Call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 for realtor referral near you. You can also visit their website, frontporchrealtygroup.com, for more information on the services they provide, including upcoming workshops and seminars. For more information, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com. Front Porch Realty. They'll find the solution that works best for you.
One more item. If you're starting a company, particularly one that is in an emerging market, you know that averting any sort of legal dispute is crucial to your business plan. Our friends at Tectonic Law offer an array of services that can help you avoid and preempt future litigation while also developing and protecting your intellectual property and intangible assets. Tectonic Law serves the needs of a host of emerging industries throughout California and beyond, including industrial designers, beverage makers, artists, farmers, retail stores, health practitioners, wellness experts, cosmetics manufacturers, nonprofit organizations, innovators in sustainable practices, and libraries. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
If you turned 65 recently like me, it's important you find a Medicare Advantage plan that gives you the coverage you're looking for. But finding one can be difficult. The best thing I did, and I suggest you do the same, is call a licensed insurance agent and let them walk you through your Medicare Advantage plan options. There are so many benefits you have access to, so make the call now and let the representatives explain everything to you. Our licensed insurance agents can offer you a variety of Medicare Advantage plans. Plus, the call is free, the information is free, and there's no obligation to enroll. We're here to make it easy for you to select a Medicare Advantage plan that may work for your needs. Finding a Medicare Advantage plan can be easy if you do what I did. Make a quick call right now to learn more. Thank you.
800-841-9670. 800-841-9670. 800-841-9670. That's 800-841-9670.
Hi, this is Nehemiah Purcell. You're listening to TV Confidential.
Ed Robertson, along with our guest, Mark Shaw. Mark Shaw, investigative reporter, former criminal defense attorney, and former legal analyst for CNN, ESPN, and USA Today. Mark's latest book, Collateral Damage, not only probes the lives and deaths of three of the most powerful personalities of the early 1960s, Marilyn Monroe, John F. Kennedy, and Dorothy Kilgallen, but makes the case that all three lives were ultimately cut short due to the ambitions of Kennedy patriarch Joseph Kennedy and the war against the mob waged by Robert Kennedy in the early 1960s. The publisher of Collateral Damage is Post Hill Press. You can find Collateral Damage wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon.com. For more on Mark Shaw, MarkShawBooks.com. I have three takeaways from your book.
Okay.
Takeaway number one, and we kind of touched on this before we started recording. It is hard enough to write one narrative, it is hard enough to tell the life story of one person. You tell, in Collateral Damage, you tell four stories. Dorothy Kilgallen's story, Marilyn Monroe's story, the tragic story of the Kennedy family. And the fourth story is your Collateral Damage argument. It's hard enough to do one, you do four. Writer to writer, I commend you for that.
Well, thank you, and it was a surprise to me that it all came together. I remember sending the first draft of the manuscript to the publisher, to their editor there, and I figured he would come back and say, Mark, come on, here, this needs to be moved there and whatever and all this stuff or whatever and all this work, but he actually came back and said it made sense, and I remember yelling. My wife was along and yelling. What I do is I alternate the stories. I start out with Marilyn, because normally, see, what you would do, you would investigate Marilyn's death first, then in 62, then JFK in 63, then Dorothy in 65. Well, I didn't do that, obviously. I investigated JFK's first, then Dorothy, then Marilyn. But in the book, I kind of put it in chronological order. And people say my books are easy to read, and I appreciate that. I kind of lay out the evidence like a prosecutor. But I just had to keep trying to see the similarities and then provide people with what my journey was like so they could take the same journey in the book, and I believe that's what's happened.
Takeaway number two. If nothing else, Mark, if nothing else, you remind us of the importance of primary sources, not only when writing history, as you do, but when reading history, as all of us do. And this is particularly important given that the deaths of JFK, Dorothy Kilgallen, and Marilyn Monroe are all steeped in myths, misinformation, and hearsay. And you do your best to strip away all the bad information and leave the readers with the best information you can, which, to the extent you can, is based on primary sources.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know you're the same way. You're a man of the truth. And so what you want to try to do, and I encourage researchers to do this, is, you know, don't speculate and don't use Wikipedia. You know, don't use Internet sources. Go to the primary sources. With this particular book, I never looked at anything that was written more than 2 years after Marilyn died. With Dorothy Kilgallen, same way. With JFK, same way. And with accounts, with people I interviewed or whatever, I want people who were there. Eyewitness accounts of, you know, I've interviewed people in New Orleans who knew Carlos Marcello. I've interviewed people in New York who knew Dorothy Kilgallen. So, you know, I try to give them a visualization of what was happening back then through these primary sources. And I will tell you, at the end of Collateral Damage, I try to humanize all three of these subjects, Marilyn, JFK, and Dorothy Kilgallen, both with regard to what they lost when they died at early ages. You know, Ed, they died within 40 months of each other.
Yeah, I had not realized that. I hadn't thought of that. That was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, Marilyn 36, JFK 46, and Dorothy 52. And so I point out, you know, the human side of them and what they were like and what we lost when they died and also what they lost, you know, and everything. So I think that's what I try to do, and the feedback with regard to this book has been terrific in people believing that I've given them a balanced portrayal of each of the three subjects.
Yeah, in your discussion of Marilyn Monroe, you not only go through the various books and articles written about her, but you circle the ones that you find to be most credible, and you recommend that readers read those books if they're not aware of them. One is the book that was published in 1964, The Strange Death of Marilyn Monroe. The second is a book that I was not aware of, but it was a book. It was Marilyn Monroe's own memoirs that were published posthumously in 1974.
Yeah, and that one was a puzzle because the date of it and everything was obviously beyond when she died, and there was also speculation that she didn't write the book at all, that this screenwriter wrote it and all of that. So I really doubled down on that by trying to find people who knew about Marilyn writing that book. And The other question that was interesting there, Ed, is that people would look at the language in that book and say, that doesn't sound like Marilyn. She's this dumb blonde. How could she write all this? Well, Marilyn was anything but a dumb blonde. And I actually, in Collateral Damage, suggest a book called Fragments, which was put together, a collection of her writings on the backs of hotel stationery and poems that she wrote and all of that kind. For God's sake, she read Ulysses.
Yes.
I tried to read Ulysses.
Yes.
I couldn't do that. So, you know, I tried to show that the language she used in that book called My Story was, you know, if you look at it and compare it together, that sounds like Marilyn.
The third takeaway I have from Collateral Damage, Mark, is if Carl Kolchak was the character that Darren McGavin played in The Night Stalker, crusading journalist, a TV character who inspired a lot of real-life journalists to take up journalism. If Carl Kolchak were a real person, he would be Mark Shaw.
Oh, boy.
And I say that because you are both relentless in your efforts to bring the truth to the light of day and excoriate those who try to cover it up.
Well, that's the ultimate compliment, Ed. I bless you, and I appreciate it so much, you know. We both work hard at what we do. You have a program that's lived a long time and is doing very, very well, as you told me. That's an earmark of the kind of man you are, that the respect that other people have for you and all of that. And so for someone like you to make that comment, it really means a great deal to me. Thank you.
In your epilogue to Collateral Damage, you liken the process of putting this book together to assembling a box of unassembled jigsaw puzzles. And that resonated with me because I've worked on a number of books where it's the same thing. You've got the puzzles, the pieces are there. Most of the pieces are there. But, you know, putting it together in a way that it all fits and you're not forcing one piece to fit, that's a challenge. And that's exactly what you do in Collateral Damage.
Yeah, it is a challenge, that's for sure. I can tell you, as happens with most writers, and I'm sure it happened with you, about, you know, here and there when I was working on the book, I'd get to a point where I'd say, I don't have a book here. I'm going to move on to something else. But then, you know, with Dorothy's guiding light, she's kind of guided me along through all of my research and everything. You decide that, hey, I'm going to keep going because, you know, this is important. It's history, and I want to get it right.
She really has become a hero to you both personally and as a journalist, hasn't she?
Oh, my God. How many people? I hope people will go to the DorothyKilgallenStory.org. The first photograph you see is she's in the middle of the courtroom at the Dr. Sam Shepard trial, and here are all the other reporters around her. You know, they just had such respect for her. How many people around the world who've read my books and the million, almost 3 million views of my interviews and presentations on these books up on YouTube have said to me, we wish we had a reporter with integrity like Dorothy Kilgallen, because, my gosh, she actually went out there and found the facts, did the research, found the facts, did the interviews and everything, and then came back and wrote her columns. There was no political bent to them of any kind. There wasn't any way she was trying to impress people. She let the reader make up their own mind. That's what I try to do with my books as well. So God bless her. I have such a remarkable respect for Dorothy Kilgallen, that's for sure.
Collateral Damage, the mysterious deaths of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen and the ties that bind them to Robert Kennedy and the JFK assassination by Mark Shaw, available Post Hill Press. You can find Collateral Damage wherever books are sold, as well as Amazon.com. For more on Mark Shaw, markshawbooks.com. For more on Dorothy Kilgallen, the DorothyKilgallenStory.org. Many of the primary sources on which Mark Shaw based his research for Collateral Damage are also available for viewing or screening one way or another at markshawbooks.com, unless you have a specific site for Collateral Damage.
No, that's exactly right.
Okay, markshawbooks.com. Let's talk a little bit about some of the, we teased at the beginning of our conversation, Mark unearthed more than 50 parallels, connections between Dorothy Kilgallen and Marilyn Monroe. I thought it might be fun to talk about a few of them, one of which, and I hadn't thought of this, but you argue that even something like the movie There's No Business Like Show Business, which is one of Marilyn's, you know, first big movies, provides a lot of insight into the parallels between Dorothy and Marilyn.
Well, it does. And, you know, Marilyn had a couple dreams that she couldn't realize by leaving us so early in life. One of them was she had a terrible childhood, as most people know, and yet she just loved children. And so, you know, Marilyn always wanted to be a mother. Well, it didn't work out that way with Joe DiMaggio or whatever, although I've recently found out that they were going to remarry and perhaps adopt a child. But she loved children and wanted to have a child. Dorothy Kilgallen was the mother of three children. And so there's a similarity there, obviously, with their love for children. With Marilyn, too, she just wanted to be a simple thing. She just wanted to be respected as a great actress, as a really great actress. And, of course, her early career, you see her most of the time with them promoting the sex pot, a part of her. And I found a couple films that I looked at that weren't that way, but for the most part, that was the deal. They dyed her hair blonde and they, you know, let her wear these outfits that showed off her figure and everything else like that. But as you got to 1960 and 61 and 62, you know, you could see the evolution of her acting ability. She had studied with Strasberg in New York and all of that. If you look at There's No Business Like Show Business, you'll see the various aspects of her growing as an actress. And so I would suggest that people watch that film. And then if they don't watch any other film than that one, watch The Misfits. And, you know, the reason I say that is because her co-starring with Clark Gable, you see the serious element of her acting ability there. And so, and Marilyn was being praised by people for that. And just a few days before she died, she got an offer for a Broadway play, which was always a dream. She was asked to come to Las Vegas and do some shows there because she was a good singer as well. So the whole Marilyn Monroe aura that she had changed over the years, and she was basically at the top of her profession. She was feeling good about herself. The only bump there was the Kennedys, and she was going to get rid of that and then move on in her life. And so it's just a true tragedy that she died so young.
We talked about some of the parallels between the lives of Dorothy Kilgallen and Marilyn Monroe. Want to tease this a little bit. One of the things that I found interesting, was very interested in reading Collateral Damage, Mark, is some of the parallels between Joseph Kennedy, the patriarch of the Kennedy family, and former President Donald Trump in terms of the nature of their destructive narcissism.
Well, I've gotten in trouble for that.
I may get in trouble for that for putting
right.
this on the air.
But. I've gotten in trouble for that, but I've gotten an awful lot of praise for it, too.
Yeah.
I wanted to show in the book, and I've had all the Trumpers come after me. They've put terrible reviews up on Amazon, a garbage book, and all these other kind of things, but thank goodness other people have enjoyed the book, and so it's gotten, you know, overall very good reviews. But what I was thinking about at the time when I was thinking about Joe Kennedy, and he was a bad guy, and, you know, unfortunately, kind of sipped down into the brothers Kennedy.
Yeah, of the Kennedys you discuss in the book, he comes across the worst.
Oh, yes, and, you know, he wanted to be president of the United States. But when he was ambassador to Britain, he got too close to being nice to Adolf Hitler, so FDR yanked him back to the United States, and Joe said, predictably, well, if I can't be president, I want my sons to be president. Well, Joe Jr. died in the war, so next up is Jack. And people don't believe me when I say this sometimes, and these are these people who still remember the Camelot part of the Kennedy dynasty, but Joe thought that Jack Kennedy could be president for 8 years, then Bobby, then Ted, so you'd have 8, 16, 24 years of Kennedys.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole situation with regard to John Kennedy then, you know, and the way that Joe acted with bringing in the mafia guys to win the 60 election, the way that he womanized his wife, Rose. I found a book, kind of an biography of Rose Kennedy that was written way back when, and I found an awful lot of information in there, ran around on her and all that kind of thing. And also the way that Joe Kennedy was just the ultimate me person, the narcissistic fellow, no empathy for others, wouldn't listen to anybody. If he had to, he made up the truth. Just all of these kinds of characteristics that are just the worst of a human being. And in my opinion, those are parallel to the former president. The same sort of narcissistic attitude, no empathy, all about himself, all of that reminded me of Joe Kennedy. So I used that comparison parallel in the book, but I went even further because, as you said before, I directly attribute the deaths of Marilyn Monroe.
Mark Shaw is the author of Collateral Damage, The Mysterious Depths of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen and the Ties that Bind Them to Robert Kennedy and the JFK Assassination. Collateral Damage, available Post Hill Press, wherever books are sold. You can also find it Amazon.com for more on Mark Shaw, MarkShawBooks.com for more on Dorothy Kilgallen, the Dorothy Kilgallen Story.org. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you, Ed. You're a good man, as I say.
If you've turned 65 recently like me, it's important you find a Medicare Advantage plan that gives you the coverage you're looking for. But finding one can be difficult. The best thing I did, and I suggest you do the same, is call a licensed insurance agent and let them walk you through your Medicare Advantage plan options. There are so many benefits you have access to, so make the call now and let the representatives explain everything to you. Our licensed insurance agents can offer you a variety of Medicare Advantage plans. Plus, the call is free, the information is free, and there's no obligation to enroll. We're here to make it easy for you to select a Medicare Advantage plan that may work for your needs. Finding a Medicare Advantage plan can be easy if you do what I did. Make a quick call right now to learn more. Thank you.
800-841-9670. 800-841-9670. 800-841-9670. That's 800-841-9670.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries. Robertson, for a reminder that the next edition of TV Confidential will premiere next week on this station at the usual time. Please join us as we welcome back Jerry Jewell of The Facts of Life and Deadwood, plus our friend Jim Rosen will join us as we remember the life and career of James Darren. In the meantime, Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen are with us as we remember how television news covered the Loma Prieta earthquake that occurred near San Francisco on October 17th, 1989, a tragic event that, among other things, interrupted the start of Game 3 of the World Series that year between the San Francisco Giants and the Oakland A's and put the World Series itself in limbo for 10 days.
When you're looking at, you know, from the broadcasting standpoint, I remember just coming home, coming to my friend's apartment, and we must have been glued to the TV until about 2 in the morning because we're watching San Francisco, you know, get darker. There are places without power. Just seeing what is happening there, because we have friends that are up there, and when you're living in earthquake country, you're kind of looking at, this could have been us. But just to watch how the local news people are coming in and bringing everyone up to speed as best as they can.
Yeah.
Just as well as they can, and knowing that when the sun comes up tomorrow morning, we're going to be exposed to a certain reality. And we were seeing, beautiful buildings completely wrecked, and we were seeing people in the streets. And when I did stand up, I had a whole 20-minute routine just on earthquakes living in California. And I remember around midnight, when we're watching, and I had tried unsuccessfully to incorporate it into the stand-up routine, but when, you get somebody from City Hall coming over, he's reading off of a card, this is what the status of public transportation is. And he's saying, because of the earthquake, the BART system will not be running. Our trolley systems are not going to be running. Taxi cabs are going to be dispatched for emergency use only, but the ferries will be running in San Francisco. And after watching this for several hours, we're in our friend's apartment going, and we're watching like police officers standing behind this guy going, just to have, that one moment of seriousness after all of these hours. And then, the morning after, I went to the Red Cross to donate blood.
Mm-hmm.
The place was packed, the Red Cross in Burbank, overflowing, line outside, Red Cross handing letters of apology to everybody. We appreciate what you're doing. We are so sorry. We don't have enough seats.
Yeah.
And I am there with a plumbing contractor whose plan is to give blood, and he got his team. They said, we're going to put our current job on hold. We're putting all the equipment that we have in our truck, and we're driving up there as soon as we're done giving blood. Just because there were gas lines and water lines that needed to be shut down, and they just needed those services getting up there to take care of everything. I mean, it was really amazing the amount of people that just could not wait to get up there and help with the rebuild process.
Yeah, no, it's one of those moments where
it's encouraging because deep down it shows you that people are good.
Yeah.
Inherently good. I mean, I know there are people who disagree with me, but it just shows that there is a natural instinct to want to help in a crisis like that.
Yeah. And it was two of the local anchors. I think it was at that time Tawny Little, and who was a reporter who was for Channel 7 and ABC affiliate. She was doing a morning talk show here, AM Los Angeles. And I think it was Steve Edwards, who was her co-host at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They pretty much suspended their regular show, and they were just doing a call-in because there were so many new arrivals to L.A. who had never experienced an earthquake. And even though it didn't happen in L.A., you know, it was close enough.
You know, United, Southwest, there are people making that, you know, all the time.
Yeah, and so there were people who are, you know, let's say new Californians, California transplants and not natives. And, you know, so many people were just so petrified because
they were scared to death.
Yeah, it's like, you know.
I have been here for about four years at that time, but it never experienced anything major, and that pretty much freaked me out.
Yeah, just to get that dose of reality.
I mean, the first earthquake I felt here, it was, I wouldn't even blink today, but I was ready to hop on a plane. I learned everything I could about earthquakes and preparedness. And are you ever really ready? No. But I felt I had a little more knowledge on my side.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think everyone down here in the local media really put emphasis on preparedness. This is what you need to do. But like I said, there were people who just moved to L.A. who had no friends, no family. And they would be calling up the radio talk shows. But I remember AM Los Angeles especially just scared to death that had no friends. And they said, we're your friends today.
Yeah.
You're going to stay on the line until you feel comfortable. And they just listened to this one woman until she calmed down.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like watching Suicide Hotline, extreme circumstances.
Know, it's kind of like, I mean, you know, going back to... you know, the program we did on 9/11. I mean,
yes.
Moments like that, the media can be your best friend, your only friend.
Yeah.
You know,
true source of information.
A true source of information.
Yeah. And you know, at the same time, just to be fair and balanced or all things equal, I remember the Whittier earthquake. CBS News opened with death and destruction hits Los Angeles. And the city of L.A. was so upset with Dan Rather at the point. Now, seven people died, not to diminish that, not, you know, compared to, you know, a lot more in San Francisco at that time, 63 people. But still, you know, the idea that we're trying to convey to our relatives on the other side of the country, we're okay.
Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You know, I was in bed. And then for them to get the news reports that want to sensationalize what had happened, I think because that happened about 2 years before Loma Prieta, I think the news broadcasters knew they were much more sensitive that they were speaking to an international audience reporting the news, but they were speaking to relatives. San Francisco, L.A. is full of transplants, and you can't have mom and dad on the farm or the rest of the family on the East Coast hearing things like that when they could not hear directly from the family members.
Exactly. No, there is, if it bleeds, it leads aside. There is a sense of responsibility that one should follow in the broadcasting.
And it's, and you go to San Francisco, it is a beautiful city. And, it's, you would never know what happened. But, those days were just amazing, just to watch. And the one piece of footage that just sticks in my head is somebody had a video camera on the Bay Bridge. And you see this car driving, and it just drops out of sight because you didn't realize the camera angle. You didn't realize there's a hunk of the road that is now gone.
Pancaked.
And even when you are driving, you couldn't see it. Yeah, it was on the previous level.
Yeah.
And the car is just moving forward and drops. And it looks almost cartoonish,
mm-hmm.
you know, like an Ernie Kovacs type
yeah.
sketch or something like that, that it just dropped out of sight and it was gone. And that made the plight, you know, and it also made people over here assess freeway situations and, you know, and reinforce. And so, yeah, we learned a lot from
this. This is aside. At the time, the Giants were lobbying for a new stadium. This is 15 years before they finally succeeded in getting a new stadium built. That stadium, the stadium currently known as Oracle Park. There was a ballot initiative for a publicly funded sports stadium. And the mayor at the time, Art Agnos, was behind the plan. And there had been previous initiatives like this in the past that never succeeded, but this plan looked like it was going to pass. All the pre-election polls were indicating, this is 10 days before the election, about three weeks before the election. And then, you know, the earthquake happened, and Agnos was doing his job as mayor of the city and just overlooking disaster areas and stuff like that. He did, you know, and again, he made a choice, and he did not push that as much as some people thought he would have. Come election day, the initiative was defeated. Some people blame the earthquake for that. But that's, mm-hmm. and again, that's just one of those illogical mm-hmm.
and
things.
Before where were the Cubs just before the it was one of those years where the Cubs were doing so well.
No, the Cubs made the playoffs.
The Cubs made the playoffs,
the
that's
Cubs,
right.
The I'm Cubs, the Giants had just eliminated the Cubs.
Yeah. Okay, there was an article in one of the Chicago papers. Now, keep in mind, I'm going off of 25 years of memory.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those years where people were thinking, oh, the Cubs are going to finally do it.
Yeah.
Next time.
You can enjoy Tony Figueroa's standalone podcast this week in TV history, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find audio. Ed Roberts of Tony Figueroa, Donna Allen, Bill Grice, Greg Airbar, and Susan Silver. Thank you so much for listening. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next time on TV Confidential.
One more item. Are you starting a company in an emerging market or developing something new? Do you have intellectual property but aren't sure how to protect it? Reach out to our friends at Tectonic Law. They offer rock-solid representation for groundbreaking industries who need help capturing and protecting their full portfolio of intellectual property and intangible assets, including trademark rights, copyright rights, and privacy rights. Tectonic Law streamlines the complex intricacies of intellectual property and business law in easy-to-understand terms that will help you and your company form a concrete plan of action to secure and protect the value of your brand and your creative work product. Tectonic Law is licensed to practice throughout the state of California. They also practice before such tribunals as the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers. Go to tectoniclaw.com to learn more about how Tectonic Law can help your business thrive. Tectoniclaw.com, rock solid representation for groundbreaking industries.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-217-5107. 800-217-5107. That's 800-217-5107.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com.
Hey, this is Carl in Dubai. Looking for a staycay or a getaway close to home? Well, the best houseboat rentals are happening right now in September and October at Holiday Harbor.
And the off-season rates at Holiday Harbor are amazing deals. And the lake is a perfect 78 degrees. For more information, go to LakeShasta.com or call 530-238-2383.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.